Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Connecting Faith. You can hear the show live each weekday at noon on Faith Radio. And there are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Well, welcome to Connecting Faith. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. I'm Joe Rathmanner. It is great to have you here. You know, do you ever struggle with saying things that you wish you wouldn't have said? I know I do sometimes. Ryan, my faithful man, do you ever struggle with that as well, or is that something that women struggle with?
No, it's definitely not just you, definitely not just women. It's something that we all deal with. I look back, they come to my mind instantly, things that I wish that I could just close the mouth. Don't say what you're about to say. Please stop.
Mm-hmm. And there are times when I will go to bed and I will not be able to sleep because I'm so remorseful over something I said, even though it wasn't meant to harm or bring harm. But I could see the person's face as it came out of my mouth, and I realized that was not the proper thing to say. Do you ever go through that?
Absolutely. Ooh. There's such a power with what we say. You wouldn't even think about just the vibration of your larynx and your vocal cords and the ramifications, but they're so powerful, our words.
They are very powerful, and I'm sure that if you've said something, you've probably also been on the receiving end of someone saying something to you where you don't feel so bad that they're staying up all night thinking about it.
For sure.
Oh, maybe that one is just me. Well, Proverbs 18:21 says that death and life are in the power of the tongue, and those who love it will eat its fruit. And so there can be wonderful things that come out of the tongue as well. The words that we have, God gave us this wonderful power to encourage and build up people as well. But I love the book of James because it seems very convicting for me in many areas. But he has some very strong words to say about the tongue. Basically, he says that the tongue, while small in its physical nature, has the power to corrupt the entire body. The power to set the whole course of one's life on fire. And I would definitely say that that is true. And so would our guests for today. So I'm very excited to just be able to talk about the power of our words. How can we contain them and use them for good rather than throwing them out and possibly using them to damage other people? Let me introduce you to our guest for today, and we'll get her on the show. Karen Eamon is a Proverbs 31 Ministries author and speaker. She's a writer for their Encouragement for Today online devotions that reach over 1 million women daily. She's written 7 books, including the popular Let It Go, How to Stop Running the Show and Start Walking in Faith. She's married to her college sweetheart, Todd, and is the mother of 3. She also enjoys antique hunting, cheering for the Detroit Tigers, and feeding the many teens who gather around her kitchen island. Welcome, Karen.
Hey, Joe. It's good to be with you.
Well, it's great to have you here, and I hear you're getting over a little bit of sickness.
Yes, I came down with a really bad case of bronchitis the day after Christmas, and I still got a lingering cough. So hopefully the hot tea I have sipping here will keep my cough at bay while we visit.
Good. Well, we're grateful that you have this time to give, and please don't feel bad if you have to take a little break and have a cough. We've all been there, especially during this time of year. So tell me about this book. Keep It Shut is your book. What to Say, How to Say It, and When to Say Nothing at All. Tell me what inspired you, besides the ramblings of Ryan and I that happened a little bit earlier. How were you inspired to write this book? Because we all obviously need it.
Well, I think it's because my mouth has been the thing that has gotten me in the most trouble all throughout my life. It's what people used to comment on about when I was little. I remember my very quiet uncle one time when he piped up and said, "Man, can that girl talk?" I hardly ever heard my uncle talk, but he certainly observed at a family gathering that I never seemed to shut up. And even when I was in elementary school and on through middle school, my teachers would comment on how often I talked. Even when they were trying to teach the lesson, you know, I thought I had things to say that were way more interesting than what the teacher had to say that day. And then in, you know, middle school and high school and even into college, my mouth got me in a lot of trouble by participating in gossiping or repeating things I shouldn't have. And I've struggled with anger sometimes, and it just seems like this is just one area of my life that just kept rising to the surface as an area where I would get myself in a tangled up mess and have a whole bunch of regret. And I knew that things could be differently if I just learned to keep my mouth shut, but I couldn't seem to do it on my own. And so I really went to God's word. I knew there were lots of verses in the Bible that had to do with it. I knew it was something that needed to change. And so probably about 10 years ago, you know, 8 to 10 years ago, I really started to be convicted that I have opportunities all day long to use my words, and I needed to start using them for good and not for bad. And sometimes just learning to just be quiet, because I can just fill all the gaps, because I like to talk, and the more I talk, the more I got in trouble. So it's just been a journey that God has taken me on, because I've had some bad things come about as a result of my mouth in the past. I didn't want that to be so anymore and be ruining relationships.
Well,
so that's why I kind of learned the lesson, and then I'm still learning it, actually. And as people began to notice, man, you just, you know, don't seem to struggle with this, that, or the other thing anymore, especially my husband noticed it. I really felt like, well, you know, maybe this is something that would be helpful to other people if I kind of put down in a book the things I've learned over the years. And so that's why I decided to write it.
Well, and I loved reading it because, like I mentioned earlier, I struggle with many of the same things. And I have a feeling that a lot of people do. But then some people are so good at only saying encouraging things, at least that I've witnessed. And they do hold their tongue. And I'm wondering, maybe they've just really put those words that we read in Scripture into action and taken them to heart. And why has it taken me so long to do that, Karen?
No, I know. There are some people. In fact, I write in the book about my best friend from college. We're still best friends today. And I've known her, I think, 31 years. And I don't think I've ever heard her gossip about anybody. Mm. She just doesn't. She's just now naturally more of a quiet person than me. So that probably has something to do with it, because she doesn't talk as much as I do. But I just have never really heard her struggle with that. But, you know, she would say that there are different areas of using her words that she struggles with. Maybe there's just one person in her extended family that she has a hard time with her mouth. Or maybe, you know, a person like that, their struggle could be the opposite, that they don't speak up when they should. They just tend to say nothing when they know God's saying, you really need to speak up here and say something, and they instead be quiet. So that can sometimes be the problem with our mouth, too. It's not just those of us who yak too much. Sometimes it's those of us who don't speak up when we should, or we don't speak the truth because we're a people pleaser. We kind of, you know, just take that verse of speaking the truth in love, and we think the only loving thing to do is not to tell the truth, and that's just as bad.
You're right. The pendulum can really swing both ways. I remember a scene in that movie, You've Got Mail, where the character played by Meg Ryan never said what she thought, and she would get angry, but she would never say anything. And then one time she did, and then she was talking and she said, I finally said exactly what it was that I wanted to say, and I just let it fly. And then I felt so awful. I didn't feel good. I felt so awful. So that definitely is something we don't always think about if we're the people who generally hold our tongue. Of course, I don't know what that's like. But what do you see as you travel around and speak and write for Proverbs 31? What do you find that women struggle with the most when it comes to this subject?
What I see rise to the surface the most is angry words within the home with either their spouse or with a child, that's where they seem to struggle the most. They may be able to hold it together with the dry cleaners who just ruined their favorite sweater, but they let go and unload on the toddler who just accidentally spilled grape juice on the carpet. And I think the reason sometimes that we do that, Joe, is because our families have to love us. They're stuck with us. You know, they're our family, and it's that old familiarity breeds contempt. Sometimes, you know, it's much easier for me to just let it fly when I'm upset with my husband than to do that with a stranger or with one of my good friends. Because, boy, if I do it to one of my good friends, maybe they'll go find a different friend. But I don't think my husband's going to go find a different wife because I just, you know, speak in a tone that's a little, you know, condescending, or maybe I bark at him once in a while. He's going to stick around. So it's easier to kind of let your guard down and treat your family in a way that you would never treat a friend or a stranger.
And yet you write in your book about maybe we can come up with some tactics to hold our tongue when we need to, or not to say the things that we want to say, but actually it's this condition of the heart that is at the root of what we're thinking. And it's not just about saying, but maybe we can condition our heart to think differently so that we don't have to be in that control mode so much. Talk a little bit about that and how God really already knows what we're thinking.
Well, that's exactly true. You know, the scriptures say that before a word is on my mouth, you know it completely, Lord. I mean, he doesn't just have a gist of what we're going to say. He knows it completely, mm-hmm. what we plan to say. And also in Luke, it tells us that the mouth speaks what the heart's already full of. So just trying to kind of attack it from the back end and zip our lips and stop things from coming out isn't always the solution, because it doesn't always start with our mouth. It first starts in our mind as we think a thought, and then it kind of migrates down to our heart where that thought takes hold and grows roots. And then, you know, when someone bumps into us, or my friend Lisa, our president at Proverbs 31, she'll say, when someone, you know, bumps into my happy and kind of, you know, knocks the nice out of me during the day, what's already kind of been in my mind and gone down into my heart is going to spill out of my mouth. So sometimes we need to not just try to keep our lips closed and not say something, but we need to work more on filling our hearts and minds with good thoughts and with positive things about other people, and not be so quick to just always jump on the negative. And I'm so guilty of this. I can tell you know, the top 10 things that bug me about my husband, but I know there's 50,000 things that I love about him, but for some reason, I can just point out those things I don't like at a drop of a hat, and I don't always concentrate on just thinking about all the things I do love about him, and then just randomly telling him, you know, throughout the day, you know, one thing I really appreciate about you, you always have the car filled up with gas for me. I never even think to stop at the gas station because you always have the car. So thank you for doing that, rather than go, hello, your socks are on the floor again. Can't you ever pick them up? You know, it's so easy to point out the flaws in other people and not see our own, rather than mind our own sin and see the good in other people.
Talking to Karen Eamon today about her new book, Keep It Shut, What to Say, How to Say It, and When to Say Nothing at All. We're going to talk more to Karen about what problems seem to plague you when it comes to speaking or not speaking your mind, and what is it that is in the mind, like we were just talking about, and how can we prepare our hearts to maybe have some encouraging words for people coming up. We'll be right back to talk more with Karen on Keep It Shut. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. You're listening to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Rathmanner, and today I'm speaking with author and speaker Karen Eamon. She's written a fabulous book called Keep It Shut, What to Say, How to Say It, and When to Say Nothing at All. Karen also speaks and writes for Proverbs 31 Ministries. So you've probably had a lot of meetings and small groups and devotional groups with women, correct, Karen?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So it seems like one of the, I started laughing out loud when I was reading your chapter on prayer requests and gossip within small groups, because I just thought, oh, I have been there. Why do we do that with the prayer requests? And maybe you can just explain, what is it that we use our words for to, that maybe isn't necessarily a prayer?
Exactly. excuse me. It's so easy to kind of cloak a prayer request, cloak gossip as a prayer request, because we kind of paint it with a thin glaze of concern and, you know, I just really am worried about this person spiritually, and I just have, you know, the Lord laid this on my heart, you know, all these different kind of phrases that we might use to then feel permission to share something that we really shouldn't, because we can cloak gossip as a prayer request. And I've seen this done. I've done it. And it's still gossip, and it's still wrong. And the only way, really, I think, to stop doing that or to decide if that's being done is just whoever the person is talking really needs to be honest about their motives. You know, I know I've stopped myself often before I've shared something and said, hey, we really need to pray for so-and-so because I don't know if you guys know what's going on in their family, but blah, 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 blah. I need to pause and just really check my motives and say, now, why am I saying this? Am I really, really saying this because I think they need prayer? Or is that just a tiny piece of it? And really, I want to be the first one to kind of tell them about the situation. Or maybe I'm curious if, you know, there's maybe four or five people in the room, we're at a little small group or we're at a coffee house or whatever, I'm just really curious if anybody else knows or am I the only one that knows, you know, what is really the reason I'm saying it right now? And if the reason I'm saying it right now is not 100% because I really feel this family right now needs prayer or this person right now needs prayer, and that's my only reason for sharing this, and I trust these people and it's not going to go any further, and I trust that these people, their immediate response is going to be, oh, my goodness, this person needs prayer, then I need to just not say anything. Mm-hmm. And probably 9 times out of 10, that stops me from sharing that prayer request that I have not been given permission to share. Now, of course, this doesn't apply to, you know, a friend of yours tells you on the phone or puts on their Facebook page, you know, hey, we really need prayer now. This is what's going on. Of course you can share that. Mm-hmm. But if you're divulging something for the first time that you think other people might not know about, you really need to stop and check your motives to see if that's really a prayer request you're sharing or if there's a little bit of hidden motive behind what you're about to say.
Well, you list some questions, too, that we can ask ourselves before we say what it is that we think we want to say. What are some questions so we can check our motives? What are some of those?
Well, you know, beyond just what I said, you know, about really asking if this is a thing that is being shared because you really care about that person, I think it's helpful to just keep in mind, you know, is this something that has been run through the grid of prayer? Is it something I've really prayed about, or is it just something knee-jerk I'm just going to kind of just throw out there without really praying about it first? So I think prayer has to be the foundation. We need to talk to God before we talk to others. And so often when we do that, what we say to others changes, you know, from what we were going to say if we really stop and talk to God first before we talk to others. We need to ask ourselves, is our conversation laced with grace, or is it snippy and snarky and gossipy? If so, we need to keep it shut. But if it's something that is on our hearts that we need to communicate, we need to kind of tuck it in an envelope of grace and not be accusing. If we're, you know, say we're having to talk to somebody because there's a little conflict, we need to pause and make sure that what we're delivering is in a gracious manner, even if it's a hard truth. And I think that's sometimes where we get tripped up in what I was talking about earlier with angry words, is we are so intent on getting out the truth of our feelings that we forget to kind of tuck our feelings in an envelope of grace and deliver it in a gracious manner. And then also, I think of the verse that talks to us about how our speech should be seasoned with salt. Mm. And so one thing I did when I was writing the book was I saw that was such, you know, a command almost really in scripture that Colossians 4 verses 5 and 6 says that we should be wise in the way we act toward outsiders and make the most of every opportunity. And it says, let our conversation be always full of grace, which I just mentioned, and seasoned with salt so that you may know how to answer everyone. And it kind of piqued my interest, like, well, what does seasoned with salt mean? So I researched over several months all the different uses of salt in the ancient world to which this book was written. And there are lots of uses for salt. You know, you always think of, oh, it must like spice up things, you know, it adds flavor. Well, that's one thing it does, but it also preserves, it also purifies and softens. Salt can prevent infection from spreading in a wound. There's so many things that salt does. So as I went through the properties of salt, I learned to kind of ask myself, you know, like, is this phrase I'm going to speak or these few sentences I'm going to say to someone, is it something that's going to preserve God's truth? Is it something that's going to prevent infection from spreading, or am I going to be making things worse? Is it something that's purifying and soft? You know, is it adding flavor to the conversation, or is it not doing that, and instead it's doing exactly the opposite? So I think trying to make sure our comments are gracious and they're well-seasoned and they're thought through and they've been bathed in prayer will help us to really alter what we're going to say from what first popped in our mind to say. Because I know that's probably the biggest thing I've seen as a change in me, Joe, is I don't even really know if I talk a lot less than I used to. I think I do in group situations because I constantly was monopolizing conversations and just felt every little gap in silence needed to be filled, and it needed to be filled by me. So I do think I speak less, but more than that, it's I speak differently. Like before, I really didn't have a rubric or a template or a filter or anything from when a thought popped in my head to when it came out of my mouth. It just, I thought it, I said it. And now I really kind of pause, I think it through, I mull it over, And sometimes it comes out exactly like I thought it when I first had the thought. But more often than not, it's changed a lot before it comes out. And I've seen that that's been a good thing in my life, and I've had a lot less strain and stress and damage in relationships when I have really thought, now, is this gracious? Is it seasoned with salt? And is it, am I being prayerful and careful here, or am I just kind of letting my lips fly?
Mm-hmm. Well, and one of the questions that you say to ask yourself is, how is it going to be, how is what I say going to be received by the person who is receiving it? And sometimes we don't take the time to think about that before we say what it is that we want to say, because we don't think about how they receive it. We're just thinking, oh, I need to say this. I need to get this off my chest, and not thinking about that person's situation. Yet that alone could help the way that we decide what to say or what not to say.
Oh, yeah. And I think it's a lot of it. The reason we have probably more problems with it today in our culture than maybe our mothers and grandmothers did is we just live in such a selfish age. I mean, we are living in the age of the selfie. Everything's about taking pictures of ourselves and throwing our opinion out daily, several times a day on Twitter or Facebook or whatever social media. It's all about, well, I'm feeling this. I got to say it. I'm going to express my opinion. And I think more in decades and generations past, people, you know, lived more by, if you haven't got something nice to say, don't say anything at all. And I think they held their tongue more. But right now in our culture, it's like an open invitation to just sling your opinion. In fact, I say that in the book, that I love Major League Baseball. Sorry, I root for the Detroit Tigers, not the Minnesota Twins.
It's okay.
Unless they get further than us in the playoffs. And then because we're in the same league, I will root for them. Okay. I have been known to root for them. But no longer is our pastime in America, Major League Baseball. Baseball is not the national pastime. It's opinion slinging. And people go home, and instead of firing up their television to watch baseball, they fire up their computer to sling their unsolicited opinion, not only on their own maybe Facebook page or Twitter account, but I have seen people hop on a thread on somebody else's Facebook that is just something very mild that that person was saying, but all of a sudden somebody enters the conversation and slings an opinion or gives a cutting or backhanded comment in a little bit of a snarky way, and all of a sudden a full-blown fight erupts right there on Facebook because people just feel so free to sling their opinion. Everything's just kind of about us, and hey, I'm just going to tell everybody what I'm thinking right now, even though nobody asked. It's just a very bizarre thing when you really think about it.
It's true. The accessibility of social media has certainly changed the way that we communicate with people. I remember I spent a decade of my life on television as a reporter and a meteorologist, and people would send in comments, but they would be occasional. I mean, occasionally I would get a comment. Sometimes I'd either even get a written letter in the mail that said something, but all of a sudden, email came onto the scene, and at first, you know, everyone had dial-up, and so it would take a while for someone to actually go from sitting on their couch to logging onto the computer to actually putting a comment on and then sending me an email, so I would get a few. But then as the years progressed, all of a sudden, it was so easy to send your comment right away, whether it was something complimentary of, you know, how, I don't know, great my forecast was, how nice my hair looked, or it was the opposite about how ugly that suit was, or I used the wrong word, or things like that. And I just saw this morphing of exactly what you said, opinion slinging, because it was so easy to do. And just like scripture says, just because it's easy doesn't mean it's good. And that's the message version of everything, of course, not being permissible. But why do we do that, and how does social media affect the way that we speak to others? I'd love to talk about that when we come back after the break, because that seems like something that we didn't necessarily prepare ourselves for. It just came onto the scene, and now we're in the thick of it. So how do we be kind to people or keep our mouth shut through social media? So we'll talk about that, Karen, when we come back. You're listening to Connecting Faith, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. This afternoon, we are talking about the power of our tongues, the power of our words, how we can use them for good, or maybe we've used them for not so much good. We're talking to Karen Eamon today of Proverbs 31 Ministries. She's written a book called Keep It Shut, What to Say, How to Say It, and when to say nothing at all. And if you've been listening to this conversation, maybe you have a story to tell or maybe a question for Karen, we will open up the phone lines and you can certainly call in. Or maybe you have a question but you don't necessarily want to say it out loud. We understand. You can go to My Faith Radio, click on the Connecting Faith show page. You can submit your question that way and we'll get that on the air for Karen to answer. Or you can give us a call, 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. We do have a couple of Karen's books to give away as well. We'd love to put that in your hands if you think it would be useful for you. But Karen, one thing people shouldn't do is get it and then send it to someone else, right?
You know, I have had people say that, like, I really want to buy this book for someone, but how do you creatively give this book to someone?
You don't. Don't do it. Mm-hmm. Just nothing good can be gained from that. Well,
that's right.
That kind of brings me to this conversation we were having about social media. It seems like this whole new arena to either bring life and encouragement to people or to maybe shut people down very quickly and instantaneously almost. What mm-hmm. kinds of things do we need to know about how to temper our tongue, even though it's online, how to temper our tongue with social media?
Yes, yes. Our digital tongues are such a problem today. And, you know, I'm convinced that all of the verses in the Bible that talk about how we should and shouldn't use our words, they still apply to the words that we are using online. Those are still our words. Maybe they're not coming out of our mouth. Maybe they're coming off the end of our fingertips. But when we post online or when we text someone, that can also be another place where we use our words. It's not verbally, it's with our hands, but it's still our words. And so we need to take those as seriously as we take our spoken words. And in this day and age, it's, you know, just like we were saying before, it's just kind of this weird new phenomenon in the last decade. But it's also something that we're going to have to deal with head on because it's so prevalent. It's all day long. I mean, especially if you have a smartphone, you know, people can text you or maybe you're on the internet or Facebook or whatever on your phone. So all day long, we are reading words, you know, hundreds and thousands of words today that people didn't read, you know, a decade or two ago. You maybe read the newspaper in the day, you know, first part of the day or maybe in the evening before you went to bed. But beyond that, we weren't seeing all of these comments and opinions and happenings and news and stuff just constantly all day long. And we have so many opportunities to post our words, whether it's on social media or leaving a comment on a blog. And so we need to really kind of have a little game plan for how we're going to do that. Otherwise, we're going to have a lot of regret in that area. I know so many people that say, oh, I posted a comment and then I felt so bad. I had to go back and delete it. Well, great that we go back and delete it, but how many people saw it before we deleted it, mm-hmm. you know? So I think one thing to remember is that when we're online, we're also on stage. We might think we're just talking to that one person and whose Facebook page we're on. We're just saying something to them, but we're on stage. Everybody that they're friends with can see that comment. Everybody that we're friends with can see that comment. And if someone chooses to share the original post, then even hundreds and thousands of more people can see the comment. So I think we need to remember that when we're online, we're also on stage. And yeah, we can retract something later, but who knows how many people saw it. There's no way to chase down all those people and say, oh, wait, I didn't really mean that. So it's better on the front end if we don't say it at all. I think another thing, too, that I've learned to do that's been very helpful is to just ask myself, you know, have I even earned the right to address the subject at hand? First of all, do I have a relationship with that person, a close enough relationship where I can say something about this topic? You know, I've had people that I have not talked to in 20 plus years because it's somebody maybe I went to college with or to high school with. And hey, one day they asked to be my friend on Facebook and I said, oh, that's fun. I haven't heard from them in years. And I'll say yes. And we're just kind of both Facebook friends. We see each other's stuff. No big deal. Everything's great. And then all of a sudden I'll post something very, you know, benign, just some little simple thing online. And then all of a sudden this person from my past comes out and starts slinging their unsolicited opinion at me about what I should and shouldn't do and how I should and shouldn't live my life and kind of preaching at me. And I'm like, now, wait a minute. They haven't cared to contact me in the last 20 years, nor have I cared to contact them. They're just somebody that I used to know, used to maybe be in the same dorm or the same classroom with. And now all of a sudden they're like preaching at me and telling me how to live my life. And I think we need to really ask ourselves, you know, do I have the relationship with this person that I can say something. Do I have the right to do that? And also, have I earned the right to even address the subject at hand? All of a sudden, we become overnight experts on things we really don't know anything about, you know? And we just start slinging our opinion about the topic. And maybe really it's not something that we even know much about or have expertise or a solid biblical opinion to even offer anything. It's just we want to hop on the conversation. I always tell my kids it's almost like when in baseball, you know, a batter gets hit by a pitch and all of a sudden the dugouts are cleared. Everybody's jumping on top of the pile and a big old brawl breaks out. Sometimes that happens on a comment thread in Facebook. All of a sudden everybody comes out swinging and it's just a big old pile of a fight and a mess. So we need to make sure that we really have the right to talk to that person and about that topic.
I remember listening to a story that Lisa Bevere was telling on the radio that, and she's a, for those of you who don't know, she's also an author and a speaker and speaks all around the world. And this particular time had been speaking, asked to speak at a place where it was very warm somewhere. I think it was in the southern U.S. and there was no air conditioning. And she just quickly posted on Facebook, you know, I'm speaking at this conference and I only have a sleeveless shirt on under my jacket, but it's 102 degrees or something. I don't know what I'm going to do. And she said what ensued after she put that comment on, she looked after she finished her talk and that there were hundreds and hundreds of comments going anywhere from it's fine to people having a discussion about women covering themselves to then people having a discussion on whether or not women should be speaking at all to having a discussion on the authority of men. It was just like she said, I don't even know what I did. But it blew up. And so I loved that you gave some tips on how to respond. And of course, you just gave us a couple of ones. And the other one you said is imagine that person is sitting right next to you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, would you really start, imagine the person from the original post is sitting there. Is that really what they asked or really what they said? You know, they just posted an innocent comment and do they really need a dissertation on, you know, whether or not women need to cover themselves when in public places? So it just made me think, I do really need to just think and sit back and pray before I post anything and consider that person is right across the table from me and just said something like, hey, I got a new car. I'm so excited.
Right.
Exactly.
I think, you know what, I think why it happens, Joe, is because there's some sort of both empowerment and sense of anonymity when we're behind that screen. Mm-hmm. It's like that screen's between us and that person. They're not actually sitting there. So we feel empowered to be, you know, bold and to say things online we would never say in person. And I actually see that with the maybe not mine and your personality. We sound like we kind of were twins separated at birth. And we don't, you know, we like to talk. But I see that a lot with women I know, in real life, women who go to my church or in my community or in some other social contact, you know, circle that I know who say things online on Facebook, I know they would never say in person. Mm-hmm. They would never, ever talk like that. But somehow we feel empowered because we are just really talking to a screen. It's not like really an actual person, but it is an actual person. And we're not anonymous, even though we feel this sense to, oh, I can just say whatever. Wait a minute, our little picture, our little avatar is right there. They know we said it. So we need to really, ask ourselves, would we say this in person? Would we really say this in person?
Because it can hurt someone just as much if they're reading your comment that was hurtful as it would hurt them if they were sitting right in front of you. It's still hurtful even though it comes across a screen.
And I almost feel like, I don't know, it ticks me off when somebody comes on my Facebook wall. Like, I feel like, well, that's my wall. And then all of a sudden they start this fight and they, you know, sling their opinion. I feel like if you really want to say that, go on your own Facebook page and say, you have the right to say whatever you want on that little box that says what you're thinking or how you're feeling or what your status is. But don't come on my wall and do it. And I've had to, you know, I had a friend once that I went to about this, and I was just really struggling, like, well, what do I do? What do I say? And she goes, what do you say? Karen, have you seen the delete button? Have you seen, you know, where you don't have to allow those people, you know, to talk on your Facebook page. Now, of course, I don't want to, you know, unfriend anybody. I feel bad doing that. But, you know, there have been a couple people that I've just had to, you know, I have had to unfriend because they came out of the woodwork and they always wanted to start a fight and they weren't even really someone that I currently in real life was friends with. They were someone from a long time ago that just likes to be an opinion slinger. So, hey, This is America. They can be an opinion slinger all they want to, but they need to do it on their own wall, mm-hmm. not on mine. Because I got tired of exactly what you said happened to Lisa, to putting a comment on and going back hours later and seeing all this stuff on there that is like, all I was talking about was, you know, can I give one quick example?
Sure.
Are we about to a break? Yeah. It was a couple years ago that my son, we had homeschooled our older two all the way through. And then my youngest son, when he was in eighth grade, he went to the local public school. I was never anti-public school. My husband just worked a shift where he would have never seen the children. You know, he would have said goodnight to him at Sunday night and not seen him till he woke up at noon on Saturday. So for many years, we homeschooled and our kids went to a homeschool academy. But when my youngest one went to public school, I had a lot of people that were like, oh, no, you shouldn't do that. You know, he's going to get mixed up with, you have bad people, and oh, you shouldn't do that. And I'm like, you know, hey, God's working in all educational situations. I'm not going to sweat about this. Well, when it was his first year at public school, and it got to be, I don't know, maybe like late February or something, he wanted to have a bunch of boys over to eat on a Friday night after school before they all went up to the basketball game. And I said that was fine, and I made this big spaghetti dinner, spaghetti and meatballs, and I thought it was really strange when I served it that two of his new friends, who normally at my house ate like crazy, only took salad and vegetables. And I thought, well, you know, what's wrong? And I said their names. I said, do you not want the main dish? Do you not like spaghetti and meatballs? And they both said, oh, it's Friday. We don't eat meat on Friday, because their particular denomination didn't eat meat on Friday. And so I just put something goofy on Facebook like, hey, note to self, next time I'm making a Friday night meal during Lent, I might want to rethink the menu plan. And then I put a hashtag, I should have gone for the fish sticks. Well, I just thought it was just a little innocent thing I was saying about my son and his new friends. And oh boy, did my Facebook wall blow up with a war, you know, kind of reminiscent of the Reformation.
Right.
I mean, people were just on there saying, I needed to sit those boys down and tell them they could eat all the fish sticks they wanted and it doesn't get them into heaven and they can't be true Christians anyway because that denomination doesn't. Yeah, it was insane. I'm serious. I walked away from it. I hopped back on like 2 hours later and there were like 57 comments. And I thought, this is crazy. So I just hopped back on and said, hey, everybody, I'm going to delete my post. Just letting you know. I was just making a comment, and actually I was proud of those boys that they were obeying their parents when their parents went around. They could have taken a big old plate of spaghetti meatballs. Their parents wouldn't known. I was actually proud of them. But I'm deleting this comment now because, really, I didn't mean for a fish stick comment to spark a war. And so I deleted it. It was crazy. And that was when I started to be a little more selective of, you know, if there's somebody that continues to do that, I will privately message them and say, hey, I still love you. I still want to be friends with you, but I can't allow this to go on my wall anymore, so I'm going to unfriend you. And I've only had to do it to two people. And one of them took it great and said, you're right, I'm too snarky. And the other one probably is on their Facebook slamming me right now. I don't know.
Well, I have a feeling that there will be a slew of books written just in the next year or two on Facebook social media etiquette.
Mm-hmm.
We all probably need it, and
it
does open up this world that all of us are unfamiliar with, even though some have been in it a little longer than others. It's certainly a new world and a new role that we have to play. Well, Karen, we do have a couple of questions that people have called in about. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll get your questions on live for those of you who are waiting. And we also still have a book of Karen's to give away. We're talking about her book, Keep It Shut by Karen Eamon, What to Say, How to Say It, and When to Say Nothing at All. We'll be right back on Connecting Faith. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. We're talking about our mouths today and how they can get us into trouble, whether we are speaking out loud, speaking to a person, or even speaking online. There's just a great list in a book written by Karen Eamon that says top 10 verses to help you watch your words. And this is worth the price of the book alone, Karen. So I'm just going to read one. It says, Psalm 139:4 says, before a word is on my tongue, you, Lord, know it completely. So it's like we're not fooling anyone. He knows our thoughts. He knows our motives. And sometimes it just takes praying before we speak to be able to say the right thing or maybe say nothing at all. But we do have one caller who called in, and I'm just going to read her question. She says, Karen, can you speak more about how to know when I should stay quiet? I feel like we talk a little bit too much, maybe unnecessarily. What can you say to her?
Well, I know for me, I don't know if she's meaning in a group situation or individually, but I'll kind of address both. I know for me in a group situation, it's very easy for me to monopolize the conversation, say I'm in a small group Bible study, at church or something. And whenever there's a little gap in the silence, I just have kind of grown up being uncomfortable with silence in group situations. So I think, well, somebody's got to say something. This is awkward. And so I often would just, you know, kind of jump in and fill the gap. And so one thing I've learned is to kind of count to 10. And usually when I do, somebody else finally pipes up and says something. And guess what? Other people in the group have an opinion besides me. So sometimes that helps to just kind of pause before you pipe up. Also, a thing I've done for myself in group situations, because I do know I tend to just talk too much, is I'll only say about every third thing I want to say. So when, you know, the Bible study leader throws out a question, they throw out question one, I've got a thought. They throw out question two, I've got a thought. And guess what? I've got a thought on question three also. And that I've always got a thought. So I just learned to let a couple, you know, two or three of them go by and then maybe pipe up and give my answer when the leader will toss out a question. I don't have to answer every single time. And usually when I do that, that little rule of thumb, it comes out just about right. I end up talking about the same amount as the other people in the group rather than, you know, I think we've probably all been in situations where you walk away from that small group setting and it's like maybe there were eight people in the group, but the same two, maybe three, talked over and over and over again. The other ones never got to get a word in edgewise. So I think pausing and also just kind of only talking maybe every third or fourth time. And then as far as when you're with somebody, excuse me, oh, this stupid bronchitis. Okay. I know when I'm one-on-one with someone, often I you know, as I was kind of alluding to later, I get a thought in my head like, ooh, this is what I want to say. But I've learned to stop right then and go, okay, this is what I want to say, God. Is this what you want me to say? Is this what I should say? And just trust that God will impress upon your heart. He'll speak to you. I mean, he is faithful to answer if we just ask. I mean, the Bible tells us that. So if we are really intentional and not just saying, oh, I'm going to pray about my tongue, but really pause and go, I want to say it. Should I say it? And I get an instant feeling right away of either, yep, it's okay, or you probably shouldn't. And so I don't say it. I'll say something else. And I've even had instances where someone's asked me a direct question and I really want to say something, but I know it's going to hurt them. It's not beneficial right then. It's going to be misunderstood. So sometimes I'll just say, you know what? I really, really want to give you an answer, but I really need time to kind of think about this. Can I get back with you on that? I'm going to kind of pray about it. I got some initial thoughts, but you know, I don't know if they're right, and I don't know if they're helpful, and I don't want to damage our friendship, and so I just really don't want to answer that right now. But I do love you, and I will make it a matter of prayer, and then I'll get back with you on my thoughts. Mm-hmm. And when you put that little bit of distance between the question and the answer, often it just serves as a good buffer to really get your thoughts gathered and get your thoughts in line with what God would have you say, and in line with Scripture. And, you know, 99% of the time, then when you really deliver the answer, there isn't a damage in the relationship because you've really, really thought through what you are going to say. I feel often we need to think of that verse that says, do you see someone who speaks too soon? There's more hope for a fool than for him. Sometimes we say foolish things because we just speak too soon. Mm-hmm. We haven't really thought it through.
Well, Angel, I hope that helped on knowing when it is that we know to stay quiet. And we have another question from a caller from White Bear Lake. Karen, are you there? Karen?
Hello.
Hi, what's your question for Karen?
Well, you really did answer a lot of it, but that was kind of my question about, I was curious as to why we allow so much trash on the media as far as, like you said, you know, people should have control of their tongues, and if they don't have something good to say, then maybe they ought to just keep their mouth shut, because there's so much trash, and it's hurting a lot of people. I mean, people actually commit suicide because of comments made or pictures, and I don't think our world is getting any better for allowing all this, for people to be able to go on the Internet and post things to join jihad, for killing people. I mean, it has really gotten way out there. And I think people are getting way out there, and it's very sad because, you know, I don't know, there is a proverb that talks about that there's life and death in the tongue and in your words, and there seems to be a lot of death out there now. There's probably good, but there's a lot of bad, and I don't know why that can't be eliminated.
Okay, Karen, thanks so much for your comment. And back to Karen, can you tell me, you know, one of the things you write about is just about anger, how sometimes when we're angry or we're emotional or maybe we're frustrated or maybe we've had a tough day, that sometimes that causes our filter to go away a little bit. How can we still curtail our tongue even when we're angry?
Mm-hmm. I think that the thing that's helped me the most, and I, you know, kind of started off this whole hour by saying how much my tongue has got me in trouble, and probably as an adult, it hasn't really been gossip so much. It's been more my angry words. I think the thing that has helped me the most is looking back over those relationships that have been damaged and realizing how they could have been different if I had just held my tongue. So one thing I kind of say to myself often when I'm in the heat of the moment and I want to just let something fly, and it's, again, usually towards somebody in my family, my husband or one of my kids. I don't have problems with friends or even extended family members very much. I remind myself, Karen, don't say something permanently painful just because you're temporarily ticked off. Mm-hmm. Right now, you are temporarily mad. But you could say something in the heat of being temporarily ticked off that is going to be permanently painful, that is not going to go away. And I've done that, sadly, to my kids. I've said things in the heat of the moment that 6 months later is still, there's a little pinch in their heart over what I said to them or to my husband. And vice versa. My kids have said stuff to me. My husband, very rarely, he hardly has a problem with his tongue, but maybe once in almost 30 years of marriage or twice, he's said something in the heat of the moment that I'm still like, ooh, you know, later I would have a pinch in my heart about it until we dealt with it and, you know, got it out in the open and apologized and forgave each other. But I think we don't think that in the heat of the moment. We are living in a culture, and I think it's just part of our sin nature, that we don't, we just kind of have these knee-jerk reactions. We don't really look long-term. We just go to the immediate, you know, whether that's we don't look long-term that, you know, we don't want to gain 25 pounds this year. I just want the brownie. The brownie's right here in front of me. You know, we don't put off what we want right now for what we want the most. And I think we do that in our words, that we just right now want to express how mad we are, but what we want the most is a good relationship with our husband or a good relationship with our kids. We want that the most, even though right now we want to say something that is not pretty. We need to pause before we pipe up and just ask ourselves, am I going to say something that's permanently painful here just because I'm temporarily ticked off? I will cool down. So I just need to, you know, as the Bible says, you know, not be quick to speak and slow to listen, and then we're, you know, often so quick to get angry. We get all of those backwards, you know. We are so tempted to just speak right now, you know. We're quick to anger and we're quick to speak, and we're doing it all backwards. But if we really think long term, you know, how do I want my relationship with this child to be next week? Well, then right now I better watch what I'm going to say. But we just don't do it because we just want to express things right now. We're used to being able to express things right now. And two, I think it also helps to just turn that situation around and think of the times that someone said something to you in the heat of the moment that really hurt you, and to think how you felt when that happened. So maybe that'll prevent you from doing it to the person standing in front of you. But I just think we're so used to that immediate, you know, we want immediate results in our society. We want immediate food. We want immediate change. We want immediate everything. And we immediately want to express our opinion without really thinking long term what it's going to do to our relationship with that person.
Well, it is also probably helpful to think about, okay, how did that hurt me? Do you remember do I remember being hurt by someone else by the words that they said? It's also beneficial to say, do I remember being helped when that person apologized? And it would just give us such a great incentive to, if we have said something wrong, if we have said something that wasn't appropriate, something that ended up being hurtful, even though we thought we were saying truth and love, what can we do about it? And what would your suggestion be then?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think so often we've bought that lie that sticks and stones may break my bones, but words can never hurt me. And that's not really true, you know, because bruises are going to fade and bones will eventually heal. But a scorched heart can take years to mend. So we need to keep that in mind as we are interacting with other people that, you know, yeah, think exactly what you said. Think how we felt when it happened to us. Think how that is going to affect the other person standing in front of us. And really, I don't want to sound like a broken record, just making it sound like praying is just the, one size fits all solution to everything. But if we really pause and pray, you know, before we pounce, maybe we won't pounce at all. If we just really, you know, ask the Lord, how can I, you know, best answer and talk in this situation in a way that's going to foster a loving relationship with this person? I'm not going to have regrets. We are going to continue to have a relationship in the future because I have not damaged it by what I've said.
Well, those are great words to end with. Karen Eamon, thanks so much for the brilliant book you've written and also for just spending some time with us to flesh out what it means to keep our mouth shut and some great tips on how it is to do that. Thanks so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
And thanks for listening. And again, Karen's book is called Keep It Shut, What to Say, How to Say It, and When to Say Nothing at All. Thanks so much for joining us on Connecting Faith. If you missed most of this program, you can always listen to it online at myfaithradio.com.